You are listening to episode number 9 of The Green Elephant in the Room.
Welcome to The Green Elephant in the Room, conversations about the climate and environment. Now here is your host, Rico.
This is your host, Rico, at The Green Elephant in the Room. We are coming to you from beautiful Guadalajara, Mexico, where with every episode, we address issues concerning the environment and climate change and give you timely tips, insights, and inspiration for all of us to live a cleaner, affordable, and more fulfilling lives while easing the burden we are putting on the Earth's living ecosystems. Let me ask you a question. Would you prefer to live in the Middle Ages, like the French Sun King, Louis XIV, or England's Queen Elizabeth I lived? Or would you prefer to live as you do today? Think of all the benefits of being a king or a queen. Imagine all of the people waiting on you. And think about all of your privileges, including your own court jester to entertain you, and lots of soldiers that you could use to expand or defend your territory. You would get to live in a beautiful, big castle, and people from all around the world would seek your attention and bestow compliments and gifts upon you and your family. Some of these visitors would come from far away, and they would tell you stories from distant lands. If you got sick, the wisest doctor in the kingdom would come to your service to give you the best health care available in the Middle Ages. Could there possibly be a better way to live than being a successful king or queen? At his palace at Versailles, Louis XIV had 700 rooms, but none of them were bathrooms. For that reason, he rarely bathed, and he did his duty in a pot. Daily hot showers and flush toilets are well beyond what royalty experienced. You, as an average North American, have access to a variety of foods from all around the world just by visiting your local grocery store. All the power in the world couldn't get Queen Elizabeth I fresh, non-local fruit or fresh produce before it rotted. Your transportation options as a king or a queen would be to walk, ride a horse, or take a boat. Being royalty, I guess you could have one of those litters that were carried by four guys. Travel throughout most of history would require days, weeks, even months, rather than hours like today. Traveling in the past was harsh and dangerous. We not only travel much faster, but with a level of comfort and safety that early kings could not have even dreamed of. As a king or a queen, you would live in an impressive castle, the symbol of power in your country. Of course, you wouldn't have much in the way of comfortable furniture. Wood, stone, or hay would be your choices. An indoor electric lighting? Forget about it. Once the sun went down, most people were in the dark. At night, it would be dark. People slept for much longer periods of time than they do now, almost going into a period of hibernation in the dark winter months. Candles were expensive and didn't cast off much light. Compared to most people, at least you, as royalty, could afford candles. From the earliest days of civilization, the cost of artificial light has been reduced by a factor of 500,000. What used to be too expensive to afford has become too cheap to notice. An unfortunate fact is that in our modern world, well over 1 billion people still have no light when the sun goes down. Check my website for a brief but fascinating story about the price of light throughout history. And that fancy wardrobe that you always see the kings and queens pictured in? Very heavy, very smelly, and very uncomfortable. Today we have phenomenal fabrics. The cheapest modern cotton t-shirt is unmatched by any ancient textile. Oh, and your home would be infested with rats and bugs. I am sure you've heard the idiom, "It's raining cats and dogs." Commoners often had thatched roofs on their houses. Dogs and cats would actually climb inside the thatched roofs for warmth. And when it rained, they would slip out along with rats and other vermin. How about entertainment and getting information? Okay, so maybe you have a court jester to amuse you. If the queen wanted to listen to music, she could hire an orchestra. Today we switch on the radio or television and are provided with an endless amount of entertainment for a tiny amount of money. Information, like news, came to them on foot rather than instantaneously through modern communications. Using the internet, the average American has a library millions of times bigger than the library of any king. The average American family has the option to stare at a large, colorful television screen in their own home in order to be entertained by images and sounds that cannot even be imagined by a king or a queen. And then they share them with their Facebook kingdom, which consists of hundreds of friends. You get the idea. When North Americans get sick, they can go to hospitals that offer them stunningly effective cures for many illnesses. But in the days of kings and queens, no vaccines. Hello, polio. Hello, smallpox. No antibiotics. One good infection, and you're 6 feet under. I looked it up. The greatest killers of humanity are in this order: malaria, tuberculosis, and smallpox. We have eliminated smallpox from the face of the planet, and it only exists in two places: a laboratory in the United States and a laboratory in Russia. Unsurprisingly, without much birth control, women in the Middle Ages got pregnant quite often, and the rate of death in childbirth was high. Even upper-class mothers had up to a 20% death rate from childbirth. The mortality rates for infants was similarly high. In modern Western hospitals, these numbers have been driven down to practically zero. An example that always stuck with me was Thomas Jefferson, the third president of the United States and one of the most remarkable individuals produced by this country. He had 5 children. 3 of them died, and his wife died giving birth to the last one. Could you imagine? It boggles our modern sensibilities. Even more important than medical advances in saving human lives was progress in sanitation. During medieval times, royals who felt the call of nature in the middle of the night went to the bathroom in giant tubs called chamber pots. These crude containers stunk up the room until they were disposed of by servants in the morning. Chamber pot contents were typically just tossed out the window. In fashionable Paris, people carried leather umbrellas to avoid being drenched in human excrement. Think about all the stuff we have access to and simply take for granted. Smartphones, microwave ovens, refrigerators, reading glasses, central heating, coffee, and chocolate. Really, life must have been very rigorous, even for royalty, compared to today's lifestyles. What is the point of all this? Our lives in the modern era are 1,000 times more comfortable, healthier, safer, more productive, and more fulfilling than our ancient ancestors could have ever imagined. In fact, people in the world today live far better than they did just a century ago. 100 years ago, John D. Rockefeller was the richest man in the world. He did have bathrooms, but still no air conditioning. Like Louis XIV, he and his family were still in constant danger of dying from what would be now quickly treatable ailments or accidents. Rockefeller could travel by train or steamship, or very short distances on the newly invented automobile, largely on dirt roads. Luxuries not available to Louis XIV, but still no comparison to the efficient and easy way we travel great distances today. What am I getting at here? A little perspective on how your ancient ancestors lived for most of the last 5,000 years of human civilization and how we live today. I hope it helps us have a little gratitude. So, as we have heard, we live in a time of unprecedented wealth and health. New technologies make things easier, cheaper, and more convenient. Yet, we learn to quickly complain about limitations of these technologies. The dropped cell phone calls, the slow internet connections. Psychologists refer to this as the hedonic treadmill. Hedonism is the pursuit of pleasure, self-indulgence. We all do it to some degree. We adapt easily to our good lives. Are you on a hedonic treadmill? Let's take an example. Imagine that you are stuck at an office job you dislike, performing monotonous work day after day. You dream of changing careers and becoming the owner of a small coffee shop. Finally, you quit your job, lease a retail space, and create the fun coffee shop of your dreams. At first, you feel overwhelmingly happy and blessed to have become an entrepreneur and left your boring job behind. As time goes on, however, you find going to work each day less exciting and pleasurable. Eventually, you return to the same level of malaise that you had when you were an office worker. This even happens with people who win the lottery. They become a millionaire overnight and are ecstatic. After several weeks or months, the new millionaire becomes accustomed to her new lifestyle and experiences a correspondingly decrease in happiness. As long as everyone wants more, a bigger home, a bigger TV, a fancier vacation, more stuff, more than they consumed last year, more than their neighbors, there can be no technological solution to the problem. We can never truly be satisfied. The ironic thing is that the pursuit of more and more has been stunningly successful so far. Our enormous houses are jammed with stuff. Our closets and garages packed. Our streets are overwhelmed with cars and trucks. None of this has really increased our happiness. People tend to base their needs on what we see around us, what our friends, family, and neighbors have. We see our neighbor's house or car. If they look like ours, we are satisfied. If they have a fancier house or a newer car, we are unfulfilled and unhappy. The hedonic treadmill is easy to step onto and hard to step off of. Here is something that may seem counterintuitive. We are living in the most peaceful time in the history of humanity. Certainly, there is no shortage of war around the world, not to mention famine, disease, and economic struggle. However, despite these shortcomings, the world as a whole is relatively more peaceful now than it has ever been before. The perception for many is just the opposite. Partly that is due to media saturation many of us experience. With all the cameras available today, we can actually witness violence and death from all over the world. When people are polled, the majority by far will say that violent crime is up and it is a dangerous world out there. But By almost any metric, we are living in the most peaceful era in our species' existence. Wars make headlines, but there are fewer conflicts today, and wars don't kill as many people as they did in the past. Also, global rates of violent crime have plummeted in the last few decades. Compared to our hunter-gatherer days or the Middle Ages, our chances of dying by violent crime or as a result of war are minuscule. The reasons for this are complex, but one factor is we have more stable governments that provide mediation and deter violent conflict. For example, we now have the cooperative alliances between countries such as the United Nations and the European Union. Could you imagine France and Germany going to war again?
Gonna lay down my sword and shield down by the riverside, down by the riverside, down by the riverside. Gonna lay down my sword and shield down by the riverside. Study war no more. I ain't gonna study war no more. Ain't gonna study war no more. Ain't gonna study.
So, if we are living in the most peaceful and prosperous time in human history, wouldn't this be a perfect time to address climate and environmental change? As you well know, things are simply getting worse. It seems the linchpin in all of this is our crazy level of consumption driven by social perceptions. We are going to need a change of heart and a change of mind if we are going to seriously tackle our mounting environmental issues. Desires for material things have limits. Most people really only want one dishwasher or two cars, but desire for emotional needs like status or acceptance are bottomless. Tying material goods to non-material desires ensures people are never satisfied with what they have. It's how we've convinced some of the most materially rich citizens in the history of the world that they don't have enough. Our enormously productive economy demands that we make hyper-consumption our way of life. We need things consumed, burned up, worn out, replaced, and discarded at an ever-increasing pace. And what is it that helps to create desires to drive this overconsumption? One of the main reasons is advertising. Advertising is insidious and pervasive, and it's consuming us and the planet. Our current buying behavior has very little to do with what we need and everything to do with how having something will make us feel. Advertising points out a problem you never knew you had, makes you feel bad for having it, and then sells you a solution. The end result of this twisted process is a lower quality of life, more time spent working, and horrific environmental damage due to overconsumption. The root cause of ecological destruction from resource use is more a result of overconsumption than overpopulation. Humans have base needs: food, shelter, safety, health. These are the only things that, when taken away from us, pose a risk to our survival. Where do we draw the line between consumption and overconsumption? For me, the experience of traveling and living overseas has put into perspective what I need as opposed to what I want. When my wife and I got our first international teaching jobs in Quito, Ecuador, we sold our house and had to strip back our possessions to a few boxes. We had to think about every single item we packed. Did we really need it, or did we just want it? We managed, and you know what? We survived just fine in Quito. What we weren't prepared for was coming back to the U.S. after being gone for a year or so. Walking into a typical department store like Macy's or Nordstrom's, the amount of goods available was somewhat shocking. Vast sections of perfumes, jewelry, and electronics. Endless racks and rows of clothes. Keep in mind that this had all been a normal part of my life only a year before. Here's a sobering thought that sums up what I am talking about. While the U.S. contains just 3% of the world's children, its citizens buy in excess of 40% of the world's toys. Kids are effectively regarded as consumers in training, and we know where that leads. According to studies in the U.S., the average American home contains more than 300,000 items.
I look for peace in the sunshine. I look for peace in the sunshine. I look for peace in the sunshine. I feel peace with everyone. In the heart of everyone.
Our mad materialism would be more forgivable if there was evidence that the material goods and wealth do lead to happiness. But all the evidence fails to show this. Researchers in positive psychology have concluded that true well-being does not come from wealth, but from other factors, such as good relationships, exposure to nature, and meaningful jobs and hobbies. It's clear we need a different answer to the question, what do you buy the person who has everything? Could the answer be nothing? In my family, Christmas gifts have to be handmade, an experience, or a donation. It has been found that receiving experiences as gifts can provide more happiness than possessions. Instead of buying that Christmas sweater or that birthday video game, make reservations for a play and dinner, or an afternoon playing paintball with some friends. Satisfaction in experiences, particularly if they're new and have a link with the outdoors, like a rafting excursion or surfing lessons, are much more thoughtful and bring lasting memories and more happiness. Reducing consumption doesn't mean sacrificing a good life, despite brainwashing that equates consumerism with happiness. The antidote to wanting more and more and more is to take great pleasure in the wonderful life you already have, better than a king's.
Thanks for listening to The Green Elephant. Visit us on our website, bit.ly/greenelephantintheroom. That's bit.ly/greenelephantintheroom, where you can find valuable information and links to everything that was addressed on today's show and more.
On the next episode of The Green Elephant in the Room, we will look at denial in all its splendid forms.